We're very pleased at this time to continue our study in the first book of Samuel, 10th chapter, and we're in the 19th verse. In this passage, Samuel had just called a meeting of the people, a general assembly of the people at Mizpah, to announce to them that Saul was going to be their king. But rather than just making a flat out-and-out announcement of this, although he already knew that God had appointed Saul, he'd already told Saul this fact, he had the lots cast so that it would be, in the eyes of the people, truly a determination by God that Saul had been chosen, and not appear that any partiality had been used in the selecting of Saul. And just before they begin to cast the lots, he tells them, "Ye have this day rejected your God, who himself saved you out of all your adversities and your tribulations, and ye have said unto him, Nay, but set a king over us." So just before the selection is made public, and just before these lots are cast, again, Samuel tells the people that you've rejected God by doing this. You've chosen to lean upon the arm of flesh rather than to lean upon your God. You said, "Nay, but set a king over us." So now he proceeds to tell them what to do in order to have the lots cast to make the selection. "Now therefore present yourselves before the Lord by your tribes and by your thousands." And when Samuel had caused all the tribes of Israel to come near, the tribe of Benjamin was taken. So they were going to first of all cast the lots to see which tribe it would be. Then they would cast a lot to see which of the major families in this selected tribe it would fall into. And then they would cast a lot to see which of the smaller families it would be. And then the lot would finally be cast for the individual. So the tribe of Benjamin was taken. Now Benjamin was the smallest tribe. Benjamin was a very unlikely tribe. But in the choosing of the tribe of Benjamin, those who knew the scriptures, those who were familiar with the teaching of God, would have to know that this king would be only temporary. This tribe would be only temporary because the prophecies about the tribe of Benjamin were not consistent with it being the one that would head the nation. The prophecies given by Jacob in the 49th chapter of Genesis pointed to Judah as being the tribe that would be the one that would have the king come from it. And we'd like to turn over to Genesis 49 and read a couple of those verses about this. In Genesis 49, verse 27, notice what Jacob says about Benjamin. "Benjamin shall raven as a wolf. In the morning he shall devour the prey, and at night he shall divide the spoil." So Benjamin was to be a powerful tribe, a tribe that would be quite influential, but not the tribe that would have the leadership. But notice in verse 10 of chapter 49 of Genesis, in talking about Judah, Jacob says, "The scepter shall not depart from Judah, nor a lawgiver from between his feet, until Shiloh come, and unto him shall the gathering of the people be." So Judah was to be the leader. Judah was to be the tribe that would produce the leader of the people. And we know that this did fall into the lineage of David, and it stayed in this tribe from David down to Christ. So the choosing of Benjamin as the tribe from which the king would come was going to only be a temporary thing, and as we said, those who knew the scriptures would know that this would be but a temporary use of this tribe. Verse 21, "When he had caused the tribe of Benjamin to come near by their families, the family of Matri was taken, and Saul the son of Kish was taken." So we see then there was the lot cast, and the lot fell right down to the individual of Saul, the son of Kish. And this was to demonstrate publicly to the people that this choice was of God. It wasn't Samuel's choice. It wasn't a choice made through some partiality or some negotiating behind anybody's back. It was the choice of God fully. And here it's demonstrated publicly to the people so that all the nation now knows who the man's going to be that will be the king. And the last part of verse 21 says that when they sought him, he could not be found. That is, Saul was not available. Now that they'd chosen him, now that everybody knew who he was going to be, he couldn't be found. And why he was in hiding, it's a little hard to say. It may be out of modesty, out of embarrassment. It may be because he felt that this great crush of the duties of the king were something he just wasn't ready to assume. It may be that he was reluctant to step into the limelight, in which he knew there were going to be others that would oppose him. There were going to be jealousies and envies, and it may be that this was such a tremendous change for him to go from the son of a farmer here in the tribe of Benjamin to suddenly being thrust as the leader of the nation. All we know is for sure that when they sought him, he could not be found. Verse 22, therefore they inquired of the Lord further if the man should yet come thither. So they had a remarkable ability to have communication with God. They inquired of the Lord further, whether this was the high priest seeking through the use of the Thummim and the Urim, whether it was Samuel receiving miraculous inspiration from the Lord, is not stated here, but they were able to communicate with and ask God about the matter. And the Lord answered, behold, he hath hidden himself among the stuff. Now, the stuff here is commonly interpreted to mean the baggage or the carriages or whatever articles this crowd of people had brought with them to Mizpah. So he was out away from the assembly, hidden among the articles of their baggage that they'd brought with them. And they ran and fetched him thence. So they brought him out of his state of hiding, brought him to the assembly, and when he stood among the people, he was higher than any of the people from his shoulders upward. So here he was now physically present in the assembly, and the same description is given of him as was given earlier. He was taller than any of the rest. When he stood among the people on the same level of ground that they were on, he was head and shoulders above the rest of the crowd. So he was a very outstanding specimen of manhood. He was a very likely leader for this people from a physical standpoint, and this had to be very pleasing to the people. Verse 24, and Samuel said unto all the people, see ye him whom the Lord hath chosen. There is none like him among all the people. And so Samuel now proclaims him. This is the one. Take a look at him. See him. There's none like him among all the people. And this is given as a kind of a question. Is there any other person like this man in all the kingdom? Can anyone meet up to the stature of Saul? Now, it may very well be that Saul was the very best person that could have been chosen in the kingdom at this time. But we're going to see, as we study further in the history, that Saul fell short of being an ideal king. The woes that are pronounced upon the people as a result of their seeking a king would certainly come to pass through Saul. And it wasn't God's original intention that they have a king at this time. And the only reason they're getting a king now is because the people had insisted upon it and demanded it, and God yielded to their demands. And it may be that had they waited until God was ready to put the king in that he wanted to have, that this would have more than likely been David, who would have come from the tribe of Judah, and the kingdom would not have gotten off to the start that it did with Saul. But at this time, Saul was the man. There's none like him among all the people. And all the people shouted and said, God save the king. Now, according to the Bible scholars, this phrase, God save the king, is not in the original translations at all. But what is really said here is, may the king live. May the king live. And it's most likely that when the King James Version was given, that because of their habit of making the cry, God save the king, that the translators put that phrase in here. But this truly should be translated, may the king live, or as one translation says, may the king prosper. Verse 25, then Samuel told the people the manner of the kingdom, and wrote it in a book, and laid it up before the Lord. So the manner of the kingdom, the articles that would go into effect, that would cause this kingdom to exist, that would cause this kingdom to be able to be administered by the king, the manner of the kingdom, were written in a book, and Samuel told it to the people. This may be some kind of an agreement that these elders made with the king. in which they agreed to allow him to rule over them, and they agreed to allow him to have certain powers over them, because we know that there was going to be a taxation of the people, there was going to be a conscription of the men and women of the nation to carry on the affairs of the kingdom. And even the king was going to take over certain of the lands, the best of the lands, to be his lands. And on, as Samuel had told them earlier, and this is probably just a restatement of those things he said earlier, but now it's in a formal, official capacity. The people agree to it. They wanted to go and have the king anyway, and so he wrote it in this book and laid it up before the Lord, and that may be that he put it by the Ark of the Covenant. And Samuel sent all the people away, every man to his house. Now the assembly was over. At this time, the people were to go back to their homes, go back about their everyday business. The kingdom was set to be. The king was going to begin his reign shortly. The people had done their part up to this point. They had desired the king, they had seen him selected, and they had had the manner of the kingdom stated to them and written in a book, and no doubt had agreed to it. And now it was up to those who would head the kingdom to get things going so far as the administration of the government. But verse 26 says, "And Saul also went home to Gibeah." Now Gibeah was his hometown. It was a town that had no indication of being made the head of the nation, the head of the government. But nevertheless, this is where Saul went. He was now going to be the head of this nation, but he went to his hometown, Gibeah. And there went with him a band of men whose hearts God had touched. So there were some who stuck close to Saul. Described here as a band of men whose hearts God had touched. They were dedicated to the man now as the king. They were going to be willing, no doubt, to give their lives in his defense. They were ready to protect him, ready to follow him, ready to obey him, and ready to further his cause. And it was as a result of God having touched their hearts. Now that he was the king, he was to be recognized as such, he was to be treated as such, and it was now the will of God for this man Saul to be the king of the nation. But the children of Belial said, "How shall this man save us?" Now there was another group that was opposed to him, called the children of Belial, that is the children of the wicked one. They were not following after the will of God now. Although it wasn't God's original will for them to have a king, now that God had granted them permission to have the king, and God had set the king in, it was his will that the king be. And it was his will that this man be the king. And so it behooved every person in the nation then to recognize this fact and to obey. Obey the will of God now. Obey the fact that this man was the king, and to accept this and to live according to it. But those that were called the children of Belial said, "How shall this man save us?" They didn't want to accept Saul as the king. They didn't want to feel that he had the ability and the power to lead them, to guide them, to be the head of the government, to be the head of the army, to rise up against the Philistines and the Amorites, which he would need to do. How should this man save us? And they despised him and brought him no presents. So they didn't recognize him as the king, and they didn't sanction this inauguration, this selection made by God, made there in the presence of the people by Samuel at Mizpah, in which the lots were cast. And so they were a dissenting group. Well, the response of Saul to their dissent is, "But he held his peace." And another translation of this is that he acted as though he were deaf, as though he did not hear them, as though he did not notice their bad behavior. Now, of course, at a future time, when he has the power, he will be able to deal with such as he needs to. But at this time, there's no need to. No need to even say anything to them. And he acted as our Savior did whenever he was opposed by the leaders. He held his peace. He didn't have to revile them. He didn't have to threaten them or anything of the nature, because the die was cast. He was king, and they couldn't change that fact. So we end this 10th chapter with the establishment of Saul as the king. and we noticed the various dispositions of the people. The majority of the nation went home. A small band whose hearts God had touched stayed with Saul. Another group despised him and brought him no presents. So this is very typical of mankind, and it's going to be a preview of the nature of this kingdom during the reign of Saul. So now we move on into the 11th chapter of 1 Samuel.